The Helly Kasser Jane Show airs Wednesdays, 3 p.m. Eastern. The podcast always available online at HellyKasserJane.com.
Here's my question. Bad luck looking for love in all the wrong places? It ain't easy being bi? What?
Yeah, it ain't easy being bi. You know, there's this old joke about it doubles your chance of a date on a Friday night if you're bisexual.
Outrageous? You betcha. And you ain't heard nothing yet. Hi, and welcome to the Helly Kasser Jane Show. I am Helly Kasser Jane. Thank you so much for tuning in. Today on the Helly Kasser Jane Show, the author of the riveting memoir, When My Boyfriend Was a Girl, Sunshine Mughrabi, the brutally honest account of a bisexual woman who fell in love with a transgender man. But before we begin, today, the Helly Kasser Jane Show is brought to you by Audible.com, a leading provider of spoken audio information and entertainment. Get a free audiobook and 30-day trial today by signing up at www.audibletrial.com/The Helly Kasser Jane Show. And remember, The Helly Kasser Jane Show is always available online at HellyKasserJane.com and a host of venues including iHeartRadio, Stitcher.com, Spreaker.com, TuneIn Radio, and Blog Talk Radio. When My Boyfriend Was a Girl. Yep, you heard that right. And you think you've had dating challenges. Compared to author Sunshine Mughrabi, you are pretty much an amateur. What's a girl to do when she's been unlucky in love with both men and women? Find a new plan? Well, that's exactly what Sunshine Mughrabi did, as told in her riveting memoir, When My Boyfriend Was a Girl. A brutally honest account of a bisexual woman falling in love with transgender Lior, who was born female, but who became the man of Sunshine's dreams. Married, Mr. and Mrs. Lior Mughrabi have survived it all, least of all Lior's transition from woman to man. Let's talk.
All right, lady, you are one courageous woman. Who among us would have the courage to come forth with this story? I mean, surely you had to have some reservations about telling it, and I imagine Lior did too. Where'd you find the strength to come forward?
Well, you know, it's interesting you should ask that, because we spent almost a year debating whether to go ahead with it. Lior, originally, he's a very private person. He's a very introverted person. And it was a bit, you know, it was a big step. But what we decided was, this is a story that really has not been told. I wrote this book because I wanted to read my story, and I couldn't find my story anywhere. I thought about all the people, the young people, the parents, the partners, all these people out there who might really benefit from hearing this story, and then also just anybody, everybody who might want to know a little bit more, get some visibility for this transgender issue, which is so misunderstood. It is the most misunderstood group of people.
I quite agree. You have a BA in philosophy from Vassar, a master's in journalism from Columbia, but who are you? I don't know who you are. Tell me who you are. Where you come from, girlfriend? Tell us about your childhood. I think that's important to the story.
Okay, sure. Wow, okay. Nobody's asked me about my childhood.
Well, here you go.
I had a wonderful childhood, because I grew up in a multi-generational home with my grandparents, my great-grandma, my mother, my uncle, my aunt. We're all kind of coming and going. It was the hippie era, and my parents were both hippies. And so I had this kind of really, I think I had a childhood in which I got a lot of time to explore my own world, my own inner world, the natural world. We lived in this beautiful sort of upstate New York paradise. And we also actually lived out in Silicon Valley for a period. My grandfather was an IBM fellow, which I don't know if anybody knows what that is, but it's a pretty big deal. He was like a genius. And so I just spent a lot of time kind of being myself, being allowed to be who I really am. And one of the things that I figured out pretty early on was that I got crushes on girls and boys. So I didn't necessarily share this that openly because it was still a time when that was considered pretty weird, but I knew it.
Did your family know it or did you keep it a secret?
I remember we went to see this movie, The Bad News Bears. Do you remember that
yes,
movie?
Yeah.
It's Tatum O'Neill. When we got home, I just burst into tears and I was just inconsolable. And my grandmother said something like, you know, what do you think it is that bothered you so much about the movie? And I said something like, I didn't want her to date that boy. And
you what your mother
knew. Awkward silence, you know, and it was like, you didn't want her to, you know?
Right, right.
And I think there was a little moment where the penny dropped, you know, and it was kind of like, huh.
I love it.
This is different. This isn't what we expect. Because I was a very feminine little girl. I wasn't, you know, you don't look at pictures of me and go, oh, yeah, you could see it. You know, I was just a very typical little girl. I played with dolls. But I always knew that I liked boyish girls. I liked more effeminate boys. I loved David Bowie. I was like madly in love with David Bowie. You know?
Who wasn't? Right? I mean, seriously.
I don't know if you remember there was that long period where David Bowie was dressing in drag a lot.
Yeah, sure. Sure. Yeah, but he a stunning guy. I mean, you know, androgynous almost, you know.
Very androgynous.
Yeah, fascinating character. There were a whole bunch of guys that came out of that particular era. Bisexual, you know, I did a show, I told you off air that we did a show, what I want you of all people to go back and listen to on bisexuality. And one of the things that came up in that show was, there a lot of craziness came up in that show with all the different guests that we had, but was that a lot of psychologists say there's no such thing. What? You've heard that.
I really hope that's changing. I mean, you know, it's interesting. I really wanted to bring up the fact that lately we're getting a really, really nice turnaround where we see members of the lesbian and gay community really embracing transgender people, which for a long time, this was not the case.
Right.
It was LGBT, but we would say it's LGBT, but the B and T are silent.
Right.
You know,
right.
Kind of there's LG. Now that's okay. People can get their head around that. That's kind of, it's, you know, it's been a huge struggle, obviously, for gays and lesbians. I'm not, you know, downplaying that, but it's sort of like, you know, there's a story that you can tell that, okay, these people, they're, you know, they're this certain way, it's genetic or whatever you kind of subscribe to. But bisexuals, transgender people, these are very, very different kinds of stories. This is not the same thing.
Right.
So, you know, gosh, I don't even remember your question, but...
I think your point is well taken here, which is you're saying that there was always a schism between lesbians and transgender people. And yeah. We're going to talk about that a little bit further as we go down the line, because I do think it's an important part of your story, actually. With this bisexuality, you know, you were looking for love just like the rest of us, right?
That's right. I was looking
and
for
you were
love.
Having a hard time
in
finding it, right? Yeah, baby, I hear you. Yeah, and I got the same problem, so, right? So you're not alone. I mean, so here's my question. Bad luck looking for love in all the wrong places, as I just says, or it ain't be easy being bi? What?
Yeah, it ain't easy being bi. I mean, they say, you know, there's this old joke about it doubles your chance of a date on a Friday night if you're bisexual. But honestly, it was kind of the opposite for me. I really got to the point where I thought, you know what? There's no one for me because it's not working out. Women, it's not working out. I might as well just get used to the fact that I'm going to be single, try to have fun with it, you know, but I wasn't really the super dating type. I didn't want to go out on a million dates. I really just wanted to settle down and, you know, be with somebody and have a real deep relationship. So
yeah,
I felt pretty hopeless, honestly. I mean, I thought, well, you know.
Oh, well, right. Oh, well. So let me do this with you. So as your story goes, one bad breakup leads to another. Something along the somewhere along the way you decided to take a different path. So you went online to find someone new. You've got mail, according to Sunshine McRobbie. I love that. So that's where you met Lior, right? Online.
Yeah.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
Talk to me.
We met through a site called Planet Out, which I think is not really, I think it's part of gay.com now, but it was called Planet Out at the time, which I just love that name. Planet Out.
Right. Very significant. Yeah. For sure. And he told you he was transgender and transitioning.
Yes.
Okay.
He did. In his first email, he said, you know, I don't know if this is going to be okay with you, but I have recently started a transition from female to male. I'm living full time as a man, and I've been taking a low dose of testosterone. And that was all he really said about it. And then we talked about Israel and olives and, you know, food we loved and things like that.
Well, yeah. So when you say Israel, so that people don't know, and we're going to get into this further, Lior is Israeli and was raised in Israel. You went forward knowing this.
Yes.
And here's where you utter such a powerful revelation about who you are as a bisexual woman. You had specific attractions, as we all do, heterosexual, non, bi, gay, whatever. So Lior really was, as transgender, one could say, the right man, woman for the job, at least in a sexual sense. I mean, that part of the story made such sense to me. You found the right person in the right body. No? Yes?
Yeah, I think I really did. And not just body, but really more soul.
Well, that's for sure. That we'll get to for sure, too. But I do think that you made that point in the book, which, by the way, is a great book. Wonderfully written. Got to give you applause for that, because it is beautifully written. But I do think that that's a part of your story. He did fit more than just one criteria for you.
Yeah, I mean, it's really, I would say it's an energy that he has, he still has. But especially when I first met him, it was really about, you know, it wasn't about like what physical parts he had, because honestly, he always was a man to me. The first time I met him, it was sort of like, wow, this is the man I've been looking for. This is a man who exudes, you know, a far more complex energy, a more balanced energy. He's not all sort of one thing. He lived, you know, the first 30 years of his life, you know, as a female, as a person, you know, being identified by others as female. And it gave him a kind of a depth and empathy and complexity, I think, that I just had never experienced with any other partner.
He is a fascinating guy. By the way, he's also one hell of a great artist.
Oh, thank you.
I mean,
you
people
checked out his website.
I did, and I went crazy.
really
a talented man.
He is.
Absolutely. And he did a great cover for the book as well. I want to talk a little bit about who he is. I mentioned that he was born and raised in Israel of Jewish descent, and that he was in the Israeli Defense Force, was he?
Well, sure, of course.
Or she was. She was. Right.
Yeah, male or female.
Right. So is there anything in that childhood that we need to know more than what I think was important that I establish here? Because I think people need to know from where he came, right?
Yeah, I think a lot of things. I mean, I think that in many ways, being raised in Israel was very tough because Israel is a very small country. And during the time that he was growing up, you know, there wasn't a whole lot of support for any being alternative in any way. It was a pretty, you know, at the time. It's funny because now it's just a real bastion of acceptance of sexuality and things like that. But at the time it wasn't. And so it was tough for him. And he, interestingly, you mentioned the IDF. They actually put something on his medical thing about gender identity disorder. They actually called it.
Really?
Way before he even really fully acknowledged it to himself. They're very smart over there.
Huh, that's so interesting.
Yeah. And so I think, you know, at that time, he was clearly not comfortable with who he was as a woman. He did know on a very deep level. He knew from very early childhood, he's told me, you know, he knew that some part of him knew that, wait a minute, this isn't right. I really want to be a boy. but there was no way to talk about it.
Right.
There was no, you know. So he, you know, he came out as a lesbian, and that didn't even feel quite right. And, you know, he was very alternative and kind of a punk, not a punk rocker, but a rocker. He was in a band. He was actually briefly kind of famous because he was in this rock band that was doing stuff that like nobody else was doing in Israel at the time. And, you know, when I look at photos of him from that time, what I see it. I see this person who is kind of trying to hide behind their kind of, seemed like his hair was always kind of over his eyes.
Yeah.
And he just always looked a little like he was hiding, which makes me sad.
Yeah, for sure. Can't be yourself. That's a hard thing. The word the term gender fluidity, that's a term you use in When My Boyfriend Was a Girl. You came into Lior's life when he was transitioning. The nice Jewish girl was becoming a better Jewish boy. I mean, right? Or at least one who would be more comfortable in his skin. And when you met, you were attracted to him as he was, but you knew he was transitioning. So the obvious question here is, were you frightened about what was to come? Because you didn't know exactly. You mean, you could have a vision of where you guys were going to land or where he was going to land, but you couldn't know. I mean, how scary was this for you?
It was very scary. It was very scary. And it was like, I say in the book, it was like boarding a ship and having no idea where this ship was going to go. And just, you know, and there's no captain and there's no rudder, you know, and there's no compass. You're just kind of floating out there on the ocean, no idea where you're going. And it was scary. It really was.
Did you ever want to
really
just
nailed it?
Yeah. Did you just want to run sometimes?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
Why didn't you?
Why didn't I run? I was so in love. I mean, and I am to this day so madly in love with this man. He is so wonderful. He is truly the most wonderful human being. And it was so romantic, you know. Being with him felt so incredibly good. It was just this feeling of like, this is what I've been looking for my whole life. How can I walk away from this? This is like beyond Hollywood romance.
But this says so much about who you are as a person. I mean, seriously, what a great person.
Oh, thank you.
You're well. No, because most people wouldn't have the chutzpah to do it because it's so antithetical to what is where we're going now, the norm. You know, there's no such thing as norm, but you know what I'm saying. And you said, screw it. I'm, you know, this is somebody I love and I'm not judging and I'm going for it. I you know, we're going to talk about the Bruce Jenner thing. It'll probably come up a lot in this conversation because, you know, it's out there.
Yeah.
I'm interested in the other side. I'm interested in all the women who were married to him, who knew, some who walked, some who stayed maybe for the wrong reasons. We don't know. Some who are feeling very badly right now. I think that the side of the story is, in my mind, it's just a love story that has to have this one quirky little part of it. And it's only quirky because we're not used to it. It's not quirky because of it.
Yes, yes. It's a love story. I mean, my book is a love story with a twist, essentially.
Right. It could be any other. But listen to me. So I'm thinking about you. I'm thinking about you a lot over the last week. And I'm thinking to myself that when people are not in the continuum of what we call norm. So just hear me out on this. And I put that norm again, I'm going to say in quotes, that it's for that very reason, always on the edge. I mean, you were always living on the edge as a bisexual woman, right? You're not the mainstream, you know, girl. So that intrigues me. Another person, as we've already discussed, might have gone run, right? Just dished it and said, I don't need this, but you didn't. So your norm is on the edge. Are you conditioned to the edge? And
well, I mean, you know, I mean, a lot of the book actually talks about what an incredibly stereotypical kind of female I was in so many ways. I mean, I wanted to get married. I wanted the romantic wedding with the rabbi and the, you know, the whole family there. And I, you know, I don't want to give anything away, but let's just say, you know, it was sure, in some ways I was very on the edge. In other ways, I was very
utterly normal. Right.
Very much, you know, wanted all the things that girls want, you know, and I wanted the romance and the beautiful wedding and all these things.
But so, Sunshine, didn't your mother ever say to you, curiosity killed the cat?
Probably. I didn't listen.
And look what you got. I'm single, but you listen. You didn't listen, and look what you are. I think you did a good job. So listen, the great scene in the book, one of the many great scenes in the book, is when you guys meet for the first time. I mean, love at first sight, yes?
Yeah, yes. It was love at first sight for me, yeah, definitely.
Okay. So
absolutely. I didn't believe in love at first sight. Love at first sight when I, you know, before I met Lior, I didn't believe in that. I didn't think that was, I thought that was just the stuff of novels and movies. So it really did blow me away. I looked into his eyes and I just got lost in his eyes. He does have incredibly, incredibly beautiful eyes, which people always mention. But yeah, I just fell into them. And I just thought, this is it.
But then there's the other side. And you do say in the book that transgender is the best of both worlds and the worst of both worlds.
That's right.
So talk to me, darling. What are you? You're like the ultimate balancer that you know. How come? What? Talk.
Well, I mean, you know, it's funny because, you know, we've been together almost 15 years.
Unbelievable,
now.
The
story
right?
takes place, you know, and we met in 2001. So I've been with him longer, far, far longer than I was with any other partner. And, you know, most of the time, honestly, Hallie, we're just living our lives.
Right.
We're just going out and shopping for milk and, you know, having just the ordinary things, going to restaurants. And this past year actually has been a very intense year for us, because right after the book came out, we were out celebrating and we were sitting in an outdoor cafe, and the guy was changing the propane tank on one of these, you know, those big heat lamps.
Sure, yeah, uh-huh, to keep you warm.
And I was cold, so I was right under it, and he lost control of it, and it fell on me.
What?
Yeah, and it twisted my neck, and I'm really actually very fortunate that I wasn't more seriously injured, but it was a serious injury, and we went through, this past year, we went through the ringer like you would not believe. I got worse and worse pain, and I had vertigo, and it was just an utter and complete nightmare. And that man was by my side, has been by my side unflinchingly day and night through this whole horrific nightmare of being injured. So this past year has been really bizarre, but it, in a way, it's been just even more made me realize what a great choice I made. He is so, so wonderful. And he's been taking care of me. And, you know, he took me to doctor after doctor until we finally got answers. I'm finally on the mend. I'm very relieved to say. But he's been the most incredible support. And actually, one of the things I bring up in the book is that, you know, because he is a man, and it completely, you know, reads as a man. You look at him, you see man. Nobody ever, you know, accidentally misidentifies him or something like that. You just see he's balding. He's got a beard. He's got a little paunch. You know,
he's a middle-aged guy.
He's kind of all-American looking. He's from Israel, but he's really American, you know. And, you know, when I first got to know him, I didn't really think about the fact that, you know, he had a nurturing side. He had a side of being very, very caring and getting, you know, a lot out of being a nurturer.
So he had a strong feminine side as well as a strong masculine side.
So he's the whole package. You say a nurturing side. Maybe it's feminine, or maybe it's just human, you know. And
well, point taken. We tend to put that role of nurturer with the female side.
We do.
I know that, and maybe that's it. You know, you said something there that I thought was very powerful, and that is, I suspect in your everyday life, his gender, like in everybody's life, I don't look at my boyfriends or my friends and go, woman, man, they're my friend.
You're a woman.
You're a woman. You're a man. I mean, you know, you start to sit down, sunshine, it all seems a little bit absurd.
I know.
You know? And some days, I don't know about you, but some days I'm more boy than I am girl. You know, some days I'm out canoeing or rafting or you know, and I'm being all boy. And some days, like, I'm like the most feminine. Where did all of this gender identity is what? It's such a strange thing, isn't it? It really, really is. But I want to just take a sidebar trip because the funniest thing in the book to me, and this book is filled with just delicious humor, which you would not expect, but it's when you're dating and you guys are doing this mating thing, you know, this dating game thing, you know, who's going to call who, who's going to break the ice, who's going to, you know, and I think it was you, didn't you say, well, because he said to you, why didn't you call me?
Yep.
And you said, back, not the whole sentence, but you did say something to the tune of what, you're the boy and you're the one supposed to call.
I've been waiting by the phone, you know, when was he going to call, you know, and I'm trying to do the rules on him and everything and not, you know, chase him too much. And meanwhile, he's sitting by the phone wondering when I'm going to call because he had called last or, you know, whatever. And I'm glad you saw the humor in the book.
Oh, are you kidding? If you don't laugh at the craziness of the world that we live in and the way life is, you're not going to survive. And I love the fact that you have a third eye that is just this wonderful sense of humor eye thing that you get. But it's not all easy either. So let's get serious for a second. There's a lot of stuff that went into this because you were working with him. You were going through the transition. And you readily admit that, you know, it wasn't easy. You said that already. There's this testosterone aspect to it.
Yeah.
Enlighten us on that because you said in the beginning he was starting off very slowly, but he did start to increase and get up to higher dosage. And that brings not just physical changes, but amazing emotional rides, kind of like women on estrogen.
Yes, it was an absolute roller coaster from just, you know, so many things change when a person takes testosterone in these kind of doses. And for example, they're just horny all the time. They're like a teenage boy.
All right, that's not bad, right?
Yeah, well, it's great when it's all about me, although sometimes it was like, geez, you know, okay, I really got to get to work. And I mean, work later and later, and, you know, but the problem was that he was kind of looking at everybody.
Sure.
He wasn't just looking at me.
Right.
And I got really jealous. I mean, you know, in those early months when everything, you're so insecure. I was so insecure about were we going to make it. And he's checking out everybody. Plus, he was looking, he went through a phase where he looked a lot younger. He was, you know, 30, 31 years old, but he looked like 18, 19. He kind of had this teenage boy kind of look. And it was kind of this like sexy jailbait look. You know, he's kind of effeminate looking with the short hair and the big eyes and the, you know, just something about that phase that he went through. He really looked really hot. And men and women, we lived in the kind of gay neighborhood of Seattle at the time, and men and women were checking him out left and right, and he was just soaking it up, you know. I mean, he was loving it. And I, meanwhile, was like, you know, I'm an attractive woman, but, you know, I was just invisible. And I would get this look from gay men like, oh, honey, you know, I don't think you realize, but this boy, you know, he's really one of us kind of look. And I had this idea I should just get a t-shirt that said that had something on it like, no, honey, you're the one who's clueless. No, you're the one who doesn't get it. Okay. But it was hard because he was flirting his ass off with all kinds of people. And he couldn't stop himself, and he admitted, he said, you know, before transition, he would just only see the one person that he was with. Everybody else was, you know, invisible. But with this testosterone going through his veins, it wasn't like that. He was wanting everybody.
Right, and the other one was the rage, because he did have, like, a lot of rage events that levels off, though, yes?
It does, yes. Oh, yes. Thank goodness. The rage thing didn't last that long, because that would have torn us apart. But he, you know, he was, because he's a very, very gentle, kind person. And I, you know, the one example I gave in the book was when, you know, I broke a glass and he just flipped out on me. I mean, he just, you know, it could have been worse, but he got really stomped around and why didn't you watch what you were doing and this whole thing. But you know what? Mostly it was more like rage at himself or just, you know, road rage. We'd be driving and he'd be yelling at the other drivers. And he is Israeli, so
yeah. So he's got that on top of it, right? You know, emotions run run riot in Israelis. The physical aspects, I know, is a difficult subject for you. We talked off air about this, and I said I'll throw some stuff out. You take what you want, and you leave the rest. I know that people are interested in it, maybe for salacious reasons.
Yeah.
Okay, I get that, but I think I think a lot of people don't understand what this really is, this transgender thing.
Yeah, I agree with you. And I think that what there's a focus on the plumbing.
Right.
It's what everybody asked me about every time they kind of got me alone. And that was the question. There were like these kind of really typical questions. And that was one of them. But, you know, this is an emotional journey. This is about going from one world to another world. And it's also a social journey. And, you know, he had to kind of relearn the social rules. This is, you know, a lot of transgender people will say, like, the hardest thing about transitioning is other people. Other people's responses, it's whether if they know, and so then they know, and they kind of have all these ideas, which usually are wrong, or they don't know, and yet they're sensing there's something, you know, like Lior didn't realize that, you know, he had to stop looking women straight in the eyes, and he had to start doing that with men. So kind of swapping that.
Yeah. Yeah.
Which you just do with and it's really hard. Your whole life you've been kind of trained to do one thing and now you have to do this other thing. Things like that, just social rules, just the, when we were joking about the dating thing, and just all these things that he had to kind of learn and figure out. And I had to kind of learn with him because I also never gave a second thought to any of this. I have always known that I'm female. I'm completely comfortable in my skin. I know who I am, and it's, you know, never once crossed my mind, oh, I should have been a boy or anything like that.
You know, on this physical thing, anybody who's smart will figure out about the plumbing.
Mm-hmm.
So let's not go into the,
okay,
all of that. It's not necessary.
Right.
Here is the part that broke my heart when I'm hearing this story. He's transitioning. He knows what he's doing. He knows this is right for him. He sees his body changing. He's probably looking at it kind of like, wow, look at what's going on here. But on the other hand, going, this is what I need. This is what I want. This is who I am. My insides and my outsides are reflective, except that he still had his breasts. And to my thing, the whole part that was so sad is because of the way the world was looking at him or at any transgender, even in transitioning, forget at the completion, that he had to bind them in order to pass off. That broke my heart.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah. And this is something that trans people just generally, and I am not an expert on the trans experience. So but what I do know, my limited understanding is that trans people, whether they quote unquote pass or not, this is, you know, this can be a lifetime struggle of sort of figuring out how much to sort of work with your body wherever you're at in the process so that you can be perceived, you hope, as the gender that you really are. And so, yeah, he had to do that. And there is a great deal in the book, not a great deal, but I think about a chapter about us going through his chest surgery experience.
Right.
And he went to this great place up in Montreal where they take care of everything. Because I get into the fact that I didn't want to, I was squeamish. I'm a generally squeamish person, and I didn't want to deal with what, you know, what kind of what it takes to go through this.
Yeah, for sure. I don't blame you. Right.
And there's these things called grenades that have to be changed. And I was just like, the grenades.
Drains for others who don't.
The drains. But he, you know, he was so sweet because he basically found a place where they would deal with this. So what I think about the binding and then the finally post surgery sort of hallelujah freedom is, yes, that was a turning point. And what I think is interesting is people want so much to talk about sort of other aspects of this, but that is a big deal. The fact is that once he had the chest surgery, he was completely, you know, passing, as they call it.
Right.
And it was this massive relief that really, I think it was a corner that we kind of turned as a couple, to just not have that hanging over us, not have me sort of looking and was there anything visible. There was that kind of whole thing was taken off the table, and it just made everything easier.
Sure. Sure.
So, and like I said, I think that for so many transgender people, there's class issues involved in this whole trans community, because depending on what you need to go through, what you can afford, there's just a big range. You know, we haven't really gotten into talking about Bruce Jenner, but, you know, one thing I think we can confidently say is that Bruce Jenner can afford whatever surgery,
Right. Exactly.
He wants. And that's just not true for a lot of people. Even chest surgery, you know, it's not usually covered by insurance, at least in this country. This is going to start changing. And there's a lot of activists working on that. But, you know, stuff like that, it's just, you know,
it's hard.
It's hard.
Let's get to, you brought up Bruce Jenner. I want to bring up one aspect of all of this. The one question everyone wanted to know, this just blew me away. Is he gay? Are you gay? She asked him that, Diane. Are you gay? People want to know, are you gay? So maybe they'll accept the fact that he's transgender and he's transitioning, right?
But look where,
yeah, but he can't be gay. I mean, did you guys watch this and think about this? I mean, how bizarre. I mean, maybe it says something about society is changing. It's a weird change. What were did you guys pick up on that like I did?
Well, okay, so we don't have a TV.
Oh, so you haven't seen it?
I watched some clips. So I did see the clip where she was just kind of going, okay, so, but now that you're a woman, does
right.
that make you a lesbian? Which I actually think is a legitimate question.
Oh, for you sure. Know, yeah, for
it,
sure.
It's just, it is. And I think what they did really well, actually, I thought ABC, from what I saw, and I didn't watch the whole interview.
It was brilliant. It was brilliant.
I thought they handled it really well. And they said, you know, they found somebody who gave a really good explanation, which is, you know, sexual identity is who you go to bed with.
Right.
Gender identity is who you go to bed as.
No Boom. Question. Right.
You know?
But my point.
Simplifies it.
It absolutely.
But I mean, it happens. And you have, you know, you do have people. I mean, I've met a lot of transgender people now. And you have people who say, I was a lesbian, I transitioned to male, I became a gay man, and I think it's because, and I have heard this more than once, they said, I think it's because I'm wired to be gay, and so when I became male, I became a gay man. I'm not saying this is how it always happens. There's a million different ways
right.
this can happen. But yeah, I mean, sexual orientation and gender identity are just two different things. They're completely different. And this is kind of going back to what I said, where for a long time, I think the gay and lesbian community and, you know, didn't get it. And that's partly why, because you can have people who are transgender who are heterosexual. Like, you know, you look at my marriage to Lior, where a man and a woman, we're married, you know, we're both bisexual, but we're basically a straight couple, right?
Right, right.
Everybody perceives us that way, and we get all the sort of, you know, societal privileges of all of that, and so on. So we have had, you know, gay friends say things to us like, well, I guess you're not queer anymore. It's like, no, we're still, you know, BT, those are in there. They're in the letterings, you know. But you know, we're a straight couple.
But there is irony because it wasn't just in the interview. It was after the interview. If you were reading Facebook, you know, feeds and things like that, and they were concerned more about whether he was gay, and they were concerned more about whether he was a Republican. And I thought, well, okay, we're making progress on the transgender thing. I mean, it's also wacky. I do want to say that this is your story. I did say to you, does Lior want to be on the show? And I know he's shy and he doesn't want to talk about all this, but we did offer that opportunity in case he wanted to speak so that people would understand that it was his choice not to. Here's another, we haven't talked in great detail, but here's the deal. Your family, your friends. I mean, were they just freaking out? Right?
Mm-hmm.
Talk to me.
Yep, they were. I mean, my sister was great. My sister is just one of those people who, like, everybody should have a sister like my sister. She's just, during this whole past year, I told you with the injury, she came out here 3 times and stayed with us. She, from day one, she was just like, oh, great. Oh, this is wonderful. You found somebody that you love. I mean, we didn't even get into the transgender thing. It was just, this is so great. You know, all these years you've been looking and you found someone. I'm so happy for you. My dad, you know, not so much.
Generational, too.
I hate to give away one of the better lines in the book, but he just kind of said something like, couldn't you just settle down with a nice woman? I mean, he'd finally gotten there on the bisexual thing, you know, and then it took him so long to come around, and to his credit, he has finally come around. He's finally gotten it, and, you know, he's very supportive now, but it took him years. It really was tough. And a lot of my friends, their kind of attitude was like, too complicated.
Yeah,
it's going to be too complicated. You know what? You're complicating your life. That was a lot of people's reaction. And then there was the kind of, you know, as we talked about, the sort of you're not really part of the community anymore thing. And then straight people, straight friends of ours being kind of weird and rejecting and not inviting us to parties anymore. And so, it was tough.
Yeah.
We were kind of shunned on both sides.
So here's an opposite question to that. Did you ever think you might be being unfair to the ones around you? I mean, family, friends, we don't live in a vacuum. Is there like the balance between what's right for you and what's right for all, for those that we love, for all that we love? Did it ever cross your mind, maybe, hey, what am I doing here for them? Is this too hard for them? Or you just were so in love, screw them.
Yeah, I was going to say, you know.
No, when sunshine falls in love, when sunshine falls in love, she falls in love, right?
Oh, man. I mean, I didn't know that I'd never fallen in love before because I thought, well, you know, because I had a very, very hot, very intense thing with a woman in my early 20s. And I kind of thought, well, that was the height of things. And then I experienced this and I went, oh, no, whoa, I didn't know. That was nothing compared to this. So, yeah, I was so gone on him and we were so right for each other. And I just kind of put all of that in its, I think, proper place, because ultimately everybody did come around. And when they saw, you know, at our wedding, there was really very beautiful speeches. My father made a very beautiful speech. Some friends made really beautiful speeches about how this so clearly was the right thing. So I think sometimes you have to sort of put all your, you know, your own needs ahead and just sort of say, you know what, they're going to get used to it. They got got used to the fact that I was bisexual. They're going to get used to this. There were some family members that I wasn't super close with who didn't know that Lior was transgender until the book came out.
Wow.
So that was a bit of a big coming out, that book.
And how did that go?
You know, it went amazingly well. Amazingly well. I was a little worried that some of them would say, you know, why didn't you tell me? But nobody did. Nobody responded that way. They just kind of went, you know what? This is just beautiful. We always knew he was a great guy, and now we're finding out this whole other side of him, you know? And one of my uncles said something like, you know, this just teaches you to, you know, never count on anything. Never assume anything about anybody, because you never know.
You never know, exactly. I think that's really true. Let me take that one step further. When you first started dating, and he was going through the transitioning, and his life was in a state of upheaval, did you, and you were madly in love, did you ever stop and say to yourself, wait, maybe I should leave him alone, maybe I should walk, maybe this isn't the best thing for him? I mean, yeah. If love, or was it if loving you was wrong, I don't want to be right? Or,
I did think about that. I did, especially at the very beginning. I remember, like, you know how they say in AA, like, the first year you're getting sober, don't date.
Right.
So I kind of wondered if it was the same thing with this. And I think, and I did. I did several times think, why? I mean, is this really the time? This timing is not good. He's just started this process. He is obviously, you know, horny as hell, and he's not sowing wild oats because he doesn't want to lose me. And yet, you know, he kind of likes wild oats or what's flying through his system right now. And should I really be doing this to him? I did think about that.
I have a personal question. Like, none of this has been
personal.
Like, I was going to say, like, none of this has been personal, Sunshine. But what happens with the bisexual thing? Is that, like, not a part of your life anymore, or what?
Well, you know, just when you're in a long-term relationship, one interesting thing, actually, and this kind of gets back to what we were talking about before, Lior doesn't really identify as bisexual anymore. He just, you know, he said he never, we were talking about this just the other day, and he said, you know, I never look at guys anymore. I just don't. I, you know, women, sure. Good looking woman, you know, that's not going to go right by him. But men, no, he's kind of let that go. He thinks maybe it's the testosterone, you know, maybe it just sort of did something eventually. Who knows? Maybe it's just life. People morph and change, and, you know, so he doesn't really identify as bisexual anymore. I still identify as bisexual because to me, that's just who I am. It's who I've always been. But I don't really check anyone out because I'm just, I don't know, I'm getting into that phase, I guess, kind of middle-aged, just sort of married and living my life. And when we're walking around, like, a cute dog, that'll get my attention. You know what I mean? Like,
I do.
I'm not looking at anyone else. I've found my love, you know?
So fascinating. So utterly fascinating, really, isn't it? A lot of the story is about living your truth, and Lior's too. And you're not public figures like Mr. Jenner is. But
thank God.
Because I can't even imagine, right? He had no choice but to do that interview, which is something that you...
He's a very brave person.
Yeah, absolutely. No question about it. But now you're living your truth. I mean, how hard or how easy had that been for you? And how hard and easy is it now as time went on? In the beginning, hard. Now, this is just it.
Yeah, at the beginning, it was just really, really hard. I mean, it was like so many things were going on at once. You know, we had friends who would, you know, out of the blue, I'm talking to a friend and she says, you know, is Lior going to be coming with us? And I go, who the hell is Lior? And she's like, oh, I mean, Lior. And I'm like, what are you doing? You know, like the things that the things we were going through with friends, with family, with ourselves, with, you know, with his crazy testosterone-fueled madness and everything. I mean, this stuff was hard. And that's why the book is set during that time. But, you know, now it's not, it's really easy. It just is. You know, it just is.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
It's just a wonderful deepening, you know, profound relationship. And as I said, this past year, it's deepened, you know, going through a big crisis together.
Still in love, kiddo, huh?
Oh, more than ever.
Oh, I'm so jealous. I'm so jealous. So listen to what I'm saying to you. Do you wish you'd been born straight? Or has this extraordinary journey you've been on brought you to peace and the understanding that we all have our stuff and it ain't easy for any of us? And talk to me. I mean, if you had the choice.
Do I wish I'd been born straight?
If you'd been born straight.
If I'd been born straight, then I wouldn't have met Lior and I wouldn't have met the love of my life and I wouldn't be where I am. So how could I wish for anything? Except, you know, what I have. I absolutely not. And actually, you know, as hard as it is to be queer, because you have to deal with societal judgments, there's some really great things about being queer. It gives you a kind of a freedom and an access to the alternative world that you couldn't have any other way. And, you know, I lived through most of my 20s. I lived in the Bay Area, San Francisco and Berkeley. And it was a fantastic, fun time to be an alternative person. And so it's, you know, of course, there's all kinds of challenges. You've got to deal with family and judgments and people looking askance at you. I'll tell you another funny story. When Lior and I first got together, right prior to us getting together, I went through phases of like dating men, dating women, dating men, dating women. It was kind of like this, you know, running into the arms of the other gender and the hope that, you know, it would get me where I wanted to go. And so I was really in a woman phase before I met Lior. So I'd been dating, and I dated like 3 women in a row, like, and all these relationships blew up. None of them worked out, but I just, you know, that was sort of the headset I was in. And Lior and I went out on this date. We went to Pike Place Market in Seattle, and we're walking around downtown. And downtown, even though he was really early transition at that point, he was completely passing as male when we were downtown, where most people are straight, because, you know, short hair, little bit of a beard, you're a man, you know. And so we're walking down the street together, and I'm going, man, there's this, something weird is going on. There's this strange feeling I'm having. And I realized, oh yeah, nobody is giving me dirty look. Like, I'm walking down the street holding hands with the person I'm dating, and I'm not getting all those dirty looks. And it's because they think, you know, he's a man, it's okay. So, it's like, whoa.
So crazy. The world is a crazy place, isn't it? But I asked you if you wish you'd been born straight. But let me take it out one more place. Honestly, if you had kids, is this the deck you would have wanted them dealt?
No, we talked out the kid thing.
Oh, no. I wasn't asking you if you wanted kids. I'm saying if you did had kids.
Oh, okay.
How would you have felt? Would you want them to have this road to walk that you and have walked and Lior has walked and you and Lior have walked together? Is that a deck you would have wanted dealt to them?
Well, you know, I didn't have kids, so I don't really know. But I would say that if I had kids, I would want them to, whoever they are, whether they were transgender or gender fluid or gender queer or bisexual or straight or gay or whatever they are, I would want them to know that I love them 100% for who they are, and that the, you know, whatever society needs to do to catch up, you know, is kind of society's problem. But who they are is absolutely 100% acceptable and beautiful. And that's the way I see it. The idea of not wanting to wish this on somebody, to me, that's just, I just don't see it that way. I see it as you hear these amazing, beautiful stories about a kid who says, Mommy, you know, I think I'm really a boy inside. Can I be called John? And, you know, this even happened with, I think, Brad Pitt
and
Angelina Jolie's kid. And they said, you know, okay, you know, whatever you want, pronouns work for you, you know, really just that to me is what parenthood and, you know, family is about. It's about total acceptance.
You didn't have kids. Why? You didn't adopt. You didn't do it. That was just
a lot of reasons. One reason is, honestly, selfish reason. Lior's an artist. I'm a writer. And we are not, we're not the people who want to pour a ton of energy into children. We kind of want our lives to be the sort of open, flexible life of artists and writers. So that was probably reason number one. Reason number two, I think it would have been a big challenge because we would have had to figure out how, because Lior cannot inseminate me.
Right.
And we looked into some options, we considered some options, and we just thought, you know what, none of this is what we would want. So, you know, I don't really want to adopt. I don't want to do artificial insemination. None of that felt right. And so it wasn't the right decision for us. I certainly respect anybody who makes a different decision, of course. And a lot of my friends who are queer in different ways are having kids like nobody's business. But it just didn't feel like the right path for us. And I'm very glad that we made that decision. And I'm very lucky because I have a wonderful nephew who is now a teenager. And I put a lot of time and energy into him, especially when he was little. I babysat him. I actually lived up in Alaska where they lived at the time for a while and looked after him. And I adore him. And I have a half brother who's also a young teenager who I also love to death. So, you know, I've had kids in my life. And
that's enough.
It's enough. Being an aunt and a big sister is working for me. So
listen, at the end of the day, like every girl, you wanted to get married.
Yes.
So
I did.
I love it. Forgetting gay marriage rights and all that transgender, you know, whatever. There was another issue, and I want to end on this because I think it's so hilarious. Because really, the issue was not that he didn't love you, and the issue wasn't that he was transgender, and it wasn't about you being bisexual. He was commitment phobic.
He is such a guy, you know. He's such a dude. It was total typical situation. Yeah.
So it turns out you did get married, a nice Jewish wedding, and I think you had a chuppah. Had the whole nine yards. He smashed the glass. I mean, oh my God, you know, there we go. I love it. So you write this book, kiddo. It's been a journey. I know it's been a journey. You told me it was a journey. At the end of the day, bottom line for you, I'm not interested in whether or not anybody out there or what they care about, whether they care for gay, they don't care for gay, transgender, or don't. For Sunshine, what's been the biggest lesson for you? What's the biggest revelation?
Oh gosh, that is a great question. I think the biggest revelation is that what really matters is being kind, being open-hearted. That's, you know, being the most generous and kind person you can be is what makes everything make sense. Loving somebody and in all of their, you know, whatever they're going through, and realizing that this is a human being, this is a soul, and this is somebody who I want him to have the most wonderful life, you know, and I want him to become the best Lior that he can be. And so I give him whatever I can. I support him in whatever ways I can to be that person. And I think that great relationships, and I do believe I have a great relationship, that's what it's about. You're growing and you're helping each other grow into the person, the best person you can be. And that takes a kind of willingness to, you know, kind of put your ego on hold and whatever else, and just be kind and loving.
I've been speaking with Sunshine Mughrabi, author of When My Boyfriend Was a Girl. For more information about Sunshine and her book, visit her website at sunshinemughrabi.com. Before I go, I want to remind everyone that podcasts of current and past shows are always available to listen to free on iTunes under The Hallie Kasser-Jane Show. The Hallie Kasser-Jane Show is also available for download via Spreaker.com, Stitcher.com, BlogTalkRadio.com, and a host of other venues. Google The Hallie Kasser-Jane Show, and you will find us. Of course, podcasts of our shows, both past and present, are always posted for your listening pleasure at HallieKasserJane.com. I'll be back next week,
same time, 3 p.m. Eastern, for another edition of the Hallie Kasser-Jane Show, brought to you by Audible.com. Get a free audiobook download at www.audibletrial.com/ The Hallie Kasser-Jane Show. Stay in touch, won't you? Remember, that's HallieKasserJane.com. Discover us on Facebook at Hallie Kasser-Jane and on Twitter at HallieCJ. I love to hear from you. So, till we meet again, this is Hallie Kasser-Jane. It's a wrap.